Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Kate, my pronouns are also she, her.
I'm Ashley, also she, her.
Hey, all right. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello. We're doing the thing.
We're doing it.
It's all happening.
Someday we'll get an episode out on time, but you know what? It's fine.
What is time?
What is time?
Girls can dream.
You know, we're just doing our best. We're recording in a closet in the middle of the day. It's fine. We're doing great.
Everything's awesome. I'm elbow deep in a vat of stuffed animals. That's not a lie
or it's true.
A euphemism. I just am.
I'm definitely going to leave here covered in glitter, but like only on my butt
because
I'm sitting in glitter.
You're sitting in glitter. Yeah. I'm leaning against a basket of snakes. But you know what? We sound pretty good.
Yes.
So we're doing it. And we are... Our topic for this month is courtesy of Ashley, who texted me without context. Diversity makes the world go round, despite what the government wants you to think. And so that's our topic for this month, is diverse books.
Yay!
Yeah! But first we're going to talk about books we're reading and have read recently. And Ashley, guess what? I'm only reading one book right now.
Whoa!
I'm so proud of you!
I mean, I did finish a different one literally this morning, but like,
well,
you know.
But that's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. What is it?
So I am currently reading, I just started a book that comes out in July called The Library at Hellbor. It's by Cass Kaw, who we love.
Woo!
Cass is great. And they, Tor Nightfire sent me this arc, and I looked at the back of it, and because it's an arc, it doesn't have, like, the actual blurb on the back. It has, like, promo stuff on the back, and it's this crumpled up, bloody piece of paper, and it says, "Welcome to the Hellbor Technical Institute for the Gifted. Course description. For the next year, you will be trained to function as people instead of monsters.
Oh, boy.
This is your journey to redemption, to a future where you could be useful. Prerequisites. Murder. A willingness to sell your soul. And an aptitude for the dark arts. Texts or materials. Whatever you can find in the library at Hellbor, if you dare to enter. Course objectives. Survive long enough to graduate."
So is this nonfiction? Like, is this a course I can take?
Can we recommend people to go to this school? Because I've got some thoughts.
I have some people that I wouldn't mind sending to the school.
I want to go.
Kate would survive.
I'm going to play the game.
So what's interesting is that in this book, so there's like the people who are accepted into this school, and then there are people who are like kidnapped and forcibly sent to this school. And so our main character is of the latter. Mm. She was kidnapped and is now just at this school. She's enrolled. And it opens with her waking up and her roommate is like brutally murdered. And she's just like, all right.
Tuesdays.
Not my first body. At least I didn't do it this time. Like, it's really funny. But yeah, it's the Hellbor Technical Institute for the Gifted is the premier academy for the dangerously powerful, the Antichrists and Ragnaroks, the World Eaters and Apocalypse Makers. And basically the whole thing is, like, you're trying to survive this school, but, like, you probably won't.
This book sounds delightful.
It's great. I'm, like, less than a chapter in, and I'm like, yes, I'm in. This is great. So that's what I'm currently reading. I did read, like, 14 books last month, but I won't talk about all of them, because that would be crazy. A couple that I'm, like, particularly excited about is I did read Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins. It's so good. So if people don't know, I guess this is the Haymitch book of the Hunger Games. We're going back in time to Haymitch's games. It's the Quarter Quell, and my heart. I'm still being emotionally devastated by this book on the daily, mostly because Fal keeps showing me, like, memes about it.
How dare they?
If there's going to be something emotionally devastating, Fal is going to poke it.
They just want me to hurt as much as they hurt, and I get it. Yeah, no, it's really, really good. The Hunger Games series, man, it really holds up. I love it so much, and the new one is real good, and it hurts a lot, but I recommend it. I finished The Cut by C.J. Dotson, who will be here later this month. She'll be here on April 24th in conversation with Liberty Hardy, who we love. And that book is gross. It's fun. There's a single mom who's escaped an abusive relationship, and she's working at a hotel as a housekeeper, and she's, like, you know, hiding from her ex, and there's something in the water, and the something has tentacles.
Doesn't it always?
Yeah. Why wouldn't it? So gross. And, like, she's being gaslit at every corner. Like, everyone she tries to, like, tell about this, they'll either come look and then there's nothing there, or they're, like, seemingly unintentionally, but obviously intentionally, like, covering her tracks. Like, she'll be like, there's something lashed out at me from my garbage, and then, like, her neighbor, like, toddles over and, like, takes the garbage out, and she's like, oh, I was just helping you, dear, and she's like, Basha! That was my proof. And so it's crazy, and it's so stressful because, again, she's being, like, gaslit and lied to. She's got her little toddler daughter with her at the hotel, and she can't really trust anyone at the hotel, and her ex is, like, actively trying to find her, and it's just this, like, chaotic stress ball of a novel. And I was like, ah! But it's real good. I liked it a lot. It was real gross and real fun, and it gets extremely cathartic at the end. There's heavy machinery involved. It's great.
Oh,
it's got everything.
Truly, it has everything you could possibly want. So that event is April 24th. It's free. If people want to come, it's going to be a good time.
We've got so many copies of that book that came in this week. So get your pre-orders in.
Yeah, get it. It's going to be great. And then I also read Everything is Tuberculosis by John Green. I love John Green. I will read anything that he writes forever. And this one, you know, for folks who have been kind of paying attention to John Green for the last couple of years, like, he's been hyper-focused on tuberculosis. It's where his thought spirals have been living. And this is his book about it. It's nonfiction. It is both a history of tuberculosis and also a true story about a young man in Sierra Leone with tuberculosis. And the novel kind of, like, I described it as, like, contracting and expanding around that narrative. So it'll, like, zoom in on this young man, Henry, with tuberculosis, and you'll get, like, a story about him and, like, an experience with him and John Green, and, like, because John goes to Sierra Leone all the time, so he's met Henry many times, and, like, it'll be, like, conversations of them and, like, Henry's day-to-day life and, like, what life is like in the hospital, and then it'll, like, expand to the history and give, like, context for that and, like, what, you know, how we were finding cures for tuberculosis, but how those cures never made it to the places that need it the most because of money, and things like that. And so the book does this kind of, like, in and out and in and out and in and out, and it is so good, and I cried a little bit because at the end, because it's very sweet. And I guess, spoiler alert, it's not really a spoiler because it's nonfiction, but Henry is okay. I just want to put that out there. Henry is alive. He's okay. He doesn't die of tuberculosis. I just want that to be extremely clear. And in fact, he is actually quite good friends with John Green's son, Henry.
Oh.
And they call each other the namesakes.
Oh.
And so, like, Henry from Sierra Leone will, like, text John and be like, how's my namesake? And, like, it's so cute. It's so cute. Yeah, highly recommend that one. And also, like, everything really is tuberculosis. Like, did you know that the Stetson cowboy hat only exists because of tuberculosis?
I did not know that.
What Right? And, like, our standard of beauty of, like, thin, rosy cheeks, rosy lips, dark eyes, like, that's tuberculosis chic.
Looking at you, Kathy.
Like, all of it. There's, like, so there's, like, ones that you're like, okay, yeah, I can see that. And then ones where you're like, now how in the heck does that connect? And he connects it. And he's like, no, it's like this guy was heading out west because he was looking for a cure and da-da-da-da and, like, fresh air. And he needed something because he was burning from the sun. And so he created this hat. And now we have the Stetson. Insane. It's crazy.
What a time.
What a time. So I really, really recommend that one, especially if you're, like, looking to read a nonfiction book this year and you don't usually read nonfiction. This one is, I mean, it's a John Green book, ultimately.
It's just a little guy.
It's just a little guy. Yeah. And it's, you know, written in John Green style, so it's very readable. It's compulsively readable. and then a couple more. I was on Edelweiss, and all of a sudden, bloop, a book became available that I had been keeping an eye on, and that book was Lucky Day by Chuck Tingle.
Woo!
Ooh, I love Chuck Tingle so much! And so this is his new one, which comes out, like, way later this year, and it is so good, and it's got genuinely the most insane chapter two I have ever read in my entire life. Like, I messaged him after chapter two and I was like, Chuck, oh my god. And he was like, yeah. that genuinely I think is gonna go down in like lore, like history, that, like, yeah, no, I was aware while writing it that was insane. So essentially the very sort of broad strokes premise of the book is that there was this day, I think it was May 23rd, when, like, the most unlikely things happened. Unhinged. Absolutely, like, if you can dream it, it happened. Like, insane. And I don't even want to, like, give examples, because the delight of reading chapter two is the surprise of the things that happened. But a ton of insane stuff happens, and our main character, Vera, loses someone very close to her in the chaos, and she basically just becomes a shut-in. Like, she is just like, this was insane. Like, she survives this thing and is like, she basically only leaves the house to go get, like, a pallet of ramen for herself so that she doesn't have to leave the house again for another, like, 3 months.
Relatable,
right? Yeah. And she's just, like, wallowing in her grief and just, like, hating everything. And then, knock, 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 into her house comes this special agent who is just, like, a bouncy little golden retriever of a man. And he's like, you're gonna help me do a thing. And she's like, why would I do that? And he's like, I don't know. Why not? You got nothing better to do. And she's like, okay. So the two of them embark on this, like, wild adventure out to Vegas, where they start investigating this casino that the, like, it's, like, supernaturally lucky. Like, it's one of those, like, the house always wins, but, like, the people are also winning too much. Like, it mathematically shouldn't be working out. And it's, like,
a money hole.
Sinister. And they're, like, something's going on here. And they start to uncover all of these, like, weird things. And, of course, it's, like, kind of supernatural. And it's all about, like, the balance of good luck and bad luck. And, like, it's just, it's insane. And it is so much fun. And I can't wait for it to come out and everyone to get through chapter two and just be like, what did I just read? And I'll be like, I know, right? I took a picture of my face having just read chapter two, and he was like, that's pretty much what I was going for. It's great.
Yes, so nailed it.
It's called Lucky Day. I loved it. At 5 stars. And then The end of March was the Trans Rights Readathon. And so I read a bunch of really great books by trans authors, but two that I wanted to shout out.
So one was How Far the Light Reaches, A Life in Ten Sea Creatures by Sabrina Imbler. And this book was so, so, so cool. Okay, so this book is split up. It's like part memoir, part nature book. So the book has 10 like vignettes, and each little vignette, each chapter is about a different sea creature, and like some you would be familiar with, others maybe not. There were several creatures I had never heard of and I found fascinating. And so Sabrina does these like, you know, like deep dives into these sea creatures, right? But then in addition to like the cool fun facts and cool knowledge about these creatures, we also get stories from Sabrina's life that they link up so beautifully with these sea creatures. And so they'll find like things in their life that overlap with these cool creatures and some of the fun facts. And the book is this beautiful and tender look at Sabrina's like coming of age and self-discovery, journey of self-discovery as they figure out their gender identity and their sexuality and things like that, layered in so beautifully with these ocean creatures that they love so much. So it's this really powerful, you know, nature memoir, I guess you'd call it. And I loved it so much, and I really highly recommend it.
And then the last one was You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty by Akweke Emezi. I don't know how else to describe it other than it's a DILF book.
Ooh!
I did not know this setting out. I was like, Akweke Emezi, a beautiful writer, wonderful writer. And I started reading it, and she's like, main character is like falling for this guy, and they're like, we're not going to hook up right away. We're going to, like, take it slow. And he brings her home to meet his dad, who she finds out on the plane is this, like, uber-famous chef from, like, a show that she loved. But he's, like, semi-retired now. Like, he's not, like, but he doesn't do the show anymore. And he just kind of, like, hangs out.
Is it
like,
Guy Fieri?
No. Wish.
We love you, Guy.
We love you, Guy. And so he just kind of, like, is rich and hangs out at home and, like, will go and he owns a bunch of restaurants and stuff, right? And she gets there and she's like, oh, no, he's beautiful. And she's like, oh, dear, I came here with this guy who I thought I was falling for, and now I'm meeting his dad who I am falling for. Oh, no.
Daddy issues.
It was great. I had a great time with it. It's, you know, it's a romance. It's got a happily ever after. Oh, boy. What a book. What a book. What a time. My face, as the story became clear as to what it was, I was like, oh, this is, oh, okay. Oh, we're doing this. I see you, Akweke. I see you. It was great. So I highly recommend reading books without finding out what they're about first.
I think it's crazy that my husband will not read, like, the back or the flap of a book. Like,
never?
Nope.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's some self-control.
Yeah. And so, like, he'll, like, have just started one and be like, oh, what's that book about? And he's like, I don't know. I just started it. Like, but
wow.
But don't you have like an inkling?
No.
No.
Wild.
Just vibes.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Couldn't be me.
Mm-mm.
Couldn't be me.
No.
I guess every once in a while, if it's like an author that I know I like,
yeah,
I'll read it sight unseen.
Yep.
I'll go into it blind and just be like, surprise me. But pulling something like off a shelf, like I gotta like,
yeah.
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 Well, there are all different kinds of readers.
Diversity!
Make the world go round.
Oh, man. Ashley, what about you? What do you got?
Well, after we recorded last time, we record on Thursdays. I don't work again until Sunday. I got here on Sunday, and there was a Sarah Penner arc with my name on it. And yeah. I was like, what magic is this? So I read that. It's the Amalfi Curse. I forget when it comes out. Sometime this summer. Mm-hmm. And it's classic Sarah Penner, like, dual timeline, following two different, like, groups of characters whose stories connect in ways that you expect and don't expect. I forget who I was talking to about it. Someone here, maybe. I, like, thought I had it all figured out, thought I knew, like, how things were gonna connect, and for the most part I did, but there was, like, one part where I was like, holy shit, how did I not see that coming? It was, like, the perfect, like, gotcha.
Oh, awesome.
So definitely recommend that when it does come out. And then also read The Dispossessed, Ursula K. Le Guin.
Which I
will read anything she writes ever. Mm-hmm. This one I bought because it was the 25th anniversary. What is time? It was an anniversary edition with a very pretty cover, and there wasn't enough room on the shelf for how many copies we had, so one had to come home with me. It's so good. There was a line in, like, the foreword, which was written by Karen Joy Fowler for this edition, that was like, even when a book is being written about, like, a future timeline, like, it is based in current events. And yes, that's true. It's sometimes really sad how much current events don't change.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, she could have written this today, and it would make perfect sense and connect to all of the craziness that's going on in our version of the world. But basically, it's there's the world and there's the moon, and at some point, people went to live on the moon because they were like, Earth is trash. But then there's one character who, forget which way it goes, he's either on the moon and goes back to Earth or vice versa, and he's the anarchist as opposed to the archist of whatever land he's in, but he's there as like a doing sciencey research things, and it's so good. Half the time I was like, I don't think I actually even understand what's happening, but the half that I do is just like so great. And then The Elements of Marie Curie was also in the mix last month. My high school science teacher periodically comes to the store on days that I'm working, and every single time she buys me a book, and it's the cutest thing, and they're always the best books.
That's so cute!
I love her so much. Shout out to Mrs. Zanderbitson.
That's so cute!
And so this was one of the ones that she had bought for me, and it sat on my shelf for a while, and I was in, like, a bit of a reading slump, and that was the one I decided to break it with, and boy, was that a great choice. I obviously knew Marie Curie was, like, super rad as a scientist. Rad.
Oh, no.
But also, she was just, like, so cool just as a person. Like, she and Pierre got married, and they were like, all right, we're gonna go ride our bikes. I was like, why didn't I think of that?
That's
what a
amazing.
Great way to venture off to your honeymoon.
Incredible.
She's like 8 months pregnant. I was like, I don't care. Like, I gotta go for this big bike ride. And I'm like, well, I love everything about you.
Women's rights.
Women's rights.
Yeah. So that one also very, very good. On my story graph, I gave it 4.75 stars. And one of my friends was like, why isn't it just 5? I was like, because I would recommend it to most people, but not literally everyone. And that's what it comes down to when I'm reading my books. If it's like, everybody should absolutely read this, it's a 5. Speaking of which, new picture book in this week.
Yes.
5 stars. Everybody should read it. It's called I Need Pants. come buy it along with Little Freddy Two Pants. Because yes. It turns out that animals in pants stories are just the best.
It's just true. So good. Ashley is our reigning animal pants expert.
It's true.
This was an unofficial job title I never knew I needed or wanted, but here we are.
I'm here for it.
The sash is in the mail.
Can't wait. We have tiny trophies for you.
Yes!
I love your rating system. My rating system, I'm all over the place. It's vibes only.
That's completely what I started with, and it's still mostly that. But, like, if I think I want to give a book a 5, I'm like, but would I tell everybody?
Wow.
And if it's not a yes, then it's a 4.5 or 4.75.
My friend Mark on his Letterboxd, which is like, you know, reviewing movies instead of books, his rating system is my favorite thing because he'll be watching a movie and he'll start at a 5 and then deduct points as he goes.
Oh, I'm gonna try that.
Smart.
But my favorite thing is he's the co-host of the podcast Jack of All Graves, and they'll be talking about a movie and he'll be describing it and he'll be like, I love this movie, it has everything I love, it's got a great cast, it's got a great plot, they filmed it beautifully, it is, you know, it's got this, it's got that, I loved this, I love that, I highly recommend it, 3 stars. And it's just, it brings so me fun. So much joy. It brings me so much joy. I'm just like, oh, Mark. Every time he starts going off about a film and he's like loving it, I'm like, that's going to be a 3-star movie. It's amazing. He's got a handful of 5 stars.
I was just going to ask, does he have any that make the cut?
He does. He does have a handful of 5 stars, but they are rare. It is tough to get a 5-star out of Mark. A 4-star is like a perfect movie. Whoa. For him, and then a 5-star is like a perfect movie and he could watch it over and over and over and over and over. So but yeah,
I like that.
I love a specific rating system. I love being like, well, it was gonna be this, but you lost points for this. Oh goodness, shout out to Mark. He doesn't listen to podcasts, but he has one.
No ska cover of 80s pop song, -1 point.
Exactly.
No twins switching places, -1 point.
Ooh, but they did the thing where they found a reason to not be able to use their cell phone in the horror movie.
Ooh.
Plus, keep a point for that.
Get a point back.
They did the thing. Or if there's a drone shot of a highway and a car driving and you're just looking down over the car driving, that's his favorite shot in all movies. That's his favorite shot. It's a drone shot of a car on a highway, winding through the trees. Yep.
I like the reflective Michael Mann shot on the hood of the car. Ooh. While it's going. And,
extremely good.
Just oil and despair.
I'm a sucker for one of those shots that turns upside down.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Those are fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Welcome to our movie podcast.
Movies. They're like books.
But you can see them. Ashley, did you have any others before?
No, those were the highlights.
Okay. Before I completely hijacked your book reviews. Kate?
Hello! So, right now, I am absolutely obsessed with this debut book that just came out on Tuesday by Jane Flett, a Scottish author. It's called Freak Slaw. And the cover is neon green. Yes. And has a big oozing eyeball and says, lock up your daughters, lasso your sons. The Freak Slaw is in town. But it's, it's perfect. It's 1997. It's middle of nowhere, Presbyterian, cold and miserable Scotland. This traveling carnival shows up and brings absolute chaos with them. And they've got your typical freak stuff, but they also have some legitimate real magic. And they've got real magic because they are secretly going to towns where witches were tortured and burned and exacting revenge on the townsfolk, the townsfolk who deserve it, via carnival shenanigans. And it is so funny and lovely and gross. Oh, it's so gross. There's very early on, there's a jar of 6 months worth of menstrual blood.
Yes!
And, oh boy, do you get into the texture of that gloop.
Gross!
But again, beautiful. Love
women's
it.
Right?
Women's
rights. And she is using them for women's wrongs. But she has righted wronged women. So.
Oh, there it is.
But, oh, yes. it's delightful. Mm. It was described, in a blurb as a combination of Angela Carter and Catherine Dunn's Geek Love. But it reminds me a lot of Caitlin Doughty's How to Build a Girl.
Okay.
It just has that real DIY rock and roll 90s sort of spirit to it. I'm loving it so far. I mean, it's going to have to do something totally, totally bananas and not in a good way to take my stars away right now, but oh god, I love it.
Oh,
so I'm reading that right now, and I am reading Nell Zink's Sister Europe, which also just came out. Her novel The Wall Creeper is one of my favorite that escalated quickly sort of books. It starts out as a strange little relationship, turns into eco-terrorism really quickly, and it looks like this one might be going that way too.
Incredible.
And oh, I can't wait for terrible things to happen to rich people. Thank you, Nell.
That.
I love you. Just finished Natalia Teodoridou's Sour Cherry.
Ooh.
Which is fantastic. Speaking of Angela Carter, oh my goodness. It is every version of Bluebeard and then some combined into a Greek chorus of fairy tale tragedy, and is this happening in the real world? Are we on stage? Are we in a brain?
Ooh.
It's gorgeous and deeply upsetting and really, 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 really good.
Nice.
Really good. I think it's Kat's pick.
I was
going
to say, I know Kat really loved it.
So you can come and buy it. I won't be mad. You can give Kat points because it's a beautiful book. I already bought one of them, so that's okay. And then into what we're covering now with our diversity. I am currently reading a youth fiction book that is so great. It's called A Hero's Guide to Summer Vacation. It's by Pablo Cartaya, and it's a Cuban-American boy who suddenly lost his father at the beginning of the school year, and now his mother has kind of set him off to go hang out with Grumpy Grandpa for the summer. Hopefully both of them can warm up and feel better with each other. And Grandpa is he's a Harry Potter level popular series author.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he's got a George R. R. Martin level of not finishing the series. But he has finally finished, and he doesn't do press. He doesn't sign books. He doesn't do all these things. He's very anxious and shy about it.
Okay.
And, his daughter is in charge of his whole empire. I was like, Dad, come on, you gotta promote this one. You gotta do it. So he got his beautiful old car out of the garage, has kind of kidnapped his grandson, and they are driving cross country for the premiere of the book and the movie, the final book and the final movie. And the boy is named after the character in the book.
Aww.
And as he drives with his grandfather, who he's always kind of resented, because he's been so insular in this literary world, he's learning more and more about his grandpa's life and how his grandpa's life is pretty much this fantasy story. His grandpa escaped Cuba in the 60s and lost a lot of people and things along the way. So his writing is kind of a doorway to the boy who's trying to process everything with his father. He takes pictures with his iPad and then draws monsters into the landscape.
Oh, that's so cute.
So it's this really sweet kids book with secret messages about why and how we make art. And it also has an omniscient narrator who pops in once in a time to poke at it, who's also kind of teaching you how to read and appreciate literature.
Mm,
cool. And it's so good. It's delightful. Mm-hmm. They stop at a school along their way that's run by a former friend of the grandpa, and it's the most accurate depiction I've ever seen of what it's like to work in a school that is mostly special ed. Mm-hmm. Like, I did that for 10 years,
yeah.
And this is the most accurate, positive depiction of the enthusiasm and charm and just overall need and want to learn and be, and it's really cute. I like it a lot.
My
it comes out in May,
really good.
And it's diverse, because that's important.
Yay!
We've got neurodiversity, we've got ethnic diversity, we've got religious diversity. It's I love it. I love it so much.
Sounds amazing.
That does sound yes. really good.
10 stars.
Perfect.
It's so cute.
What a great jumping off point for diverse books.
Just what made me want to do this theme. A few weeks ago, maybe like a month ago now, the Daily podcast on Sundays has like longer episodes that are interviews usually. And it was a Lady Gaga one who I just love.
She's great.
She can do no wrong. And so I was listening to that and there was a quote. I found this transcription on the internet. I don't remember it being exactly this. I wanted to transcribe it myself and then just forgot until right now. but about 20 minutes in, she had a quote in there. I think people that are different are part of what reminds us all how to love and how to be strong. It makes me really sad that we live in this world where it's acceptable to hurt other people to be powerful. But I think during times like these, we have to get louder. What I wish for people to know is that we can work together to be loud and we can work together to love each other. Just because dark people are winning doesn't mean that we are invisible or unimportant. And I was like, yes, Stephanie, me too. Like, yes.
Absolutely, yes.
Ditto on all fronts. And so then conveniently April, among other things, is Celebrate Diversity Month, which has apparently been around since 2004. It can legally drink and yet our Oompa Loompa of a leader is like making DEI illegal.
Yeah.
How you can't you can't make Anywho, so that was, I was like, well, I also am sad that, like, people don't, when people don't know about, like, just other ways of being in the world and, like, don't seem to care to want to learn.
Yeah.
And that ends up being reflected unintentionally pretty heavily in the books that I choose to read, and I figured you guys were in similar boats.
Yep.
So, that's all. so, yeah. Old white guys, most of literature.
Yeah.
They're categorically awful.
Yeah.
not the writers necessarily, but just in general, as is society. But still, they do nothing but cause problems.
yep.
And, a thing that seems like they seem to promote is only interacting with things and people and stuff that, like, reflects yourself, which is not only awful, but so boring.
So boring.
It's not how you learn. It's not how you grow. Like, it's how you end up in the place where we are in our society right now, where everyone's just, like, off in their own little echo chambers and, like, afraid of anything even remotely different from themselves and just, like, trolling everyone else for having different beliefs and, like, having the audacity to, like, not want to be a part of the herd. I think being curious is a much better way of being, and however you choose to explore that, for me it's in books, but also probably movies for your friends. Mm-hmm. Does he give stars back for
having diverse cast? I'll ask him, but I bet he does. I bet he does.
Yeah, so I want to know everything I can know about other people and cultures and things and all the stuff that DEI covers that we're trying to, like, get rid of. So, like, race, ethnicity, culture, disability, religion, all of it is all so much better than just being, like,
yep.
Stereotypical white person. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I'm going to butcher half of the author names that I have on my list, and I am very sorry for that in advance. So, diving in, I have a very long list of, like, race, ethnicity, culture books, and then my lunch break was over. And I realized I had paid very little attention to the rest of the things that I wanted to talk about, but so those lists will dwindle. Anywho, diving right in. The Vanishing Half, Britt Bennett. Light-skinned twin black sisters, like, in the 50s, follows them through their lives and other generations of the family up through the 90s. One of them chose to live her life as passing, and the other did not. And things and stuff happened, and I highly, highly recommend reading that. I think it had been one of the storybook of books last year.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember them talking about that.
Yep. Very, very good. Mm-hmm. The Water Dancer, Ta-Nehisi Coates. I have a funny theory with this one, because I love it. One of my favorites of all time. I also really loved Colson Whitehead's The Underground Railroad.
Yes.
Anytime I talk to someone else who has read both of them, whichever one you read first, you are convinced is the better, like, retelling of The Underground Railroad.
Oh, that's so funny.
Like, almost without fail. So I read this one first, and I just, it, like, Colson Whitehead's then could just not live up to it for me. It's still very good. I think I probably gave it four and a half stars.
Yep.
Love it so much. But The Water Dancer for me is just, it's the one. Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman, but, like, make it magic.
Love that.
It's so, so good. Yeah. Read it. If you haven't, if you have, read it again. That's one of the lay down reading challenge prompts. Yeah. So,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Dread Nation and Deathless Divide by Justine Ireland. It was a YA duology. My mom had given me the first one, I think half jokingly, because it's like, I'm obsessed with, like, Civil War. It was like a zombie Civil War situation. And so I think she gave it to me as a joke. I ended up loving it.
That's how they get you.
It's the story of this girl, Jane, who was born like a few days before zombies started like roaming Gettysburg and interrupted the Civil War.
Oh my God.
Because zombies have ruined everything, she ends up going to, like, this boarding school thing where she, like, learns to fight zombies. She's like, the queer teenage zombie fighting heroine you didn't know you needed in your life, but, like, she makes it so much better.
Oh, my God. I think I love her.
Yeah, like, 10 out of 10. No notes. So, so good. Let's see. Moving on. The Last White Man, Mohsin Hamid. Everyone is mysteriously becoming darker skinned.
Ooh.
And no one knows why. No one can stop it. It's a shortish book, pretty quick read. Just sort of dives right into, like, loss of, like, identity. Mm-hmm. And unease around somehow being not yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, love and just still being accepting of, because, like, you're not the only one changing. Everyone else around you is also changing, and, like, you're all still the same people. Just because you look different doesn't mean you're, like, worse than you were. Definitely recommend that one as well. Another one that was courtesy of my mom. I forget what I had been talking about. Some book that made her think that I would like this one. She was correct. It's another YA one. The Marrow Thieves. Cherie Demoulin. Yeah. She's a Canadian writer, member of the Métis Nation. It's like a dystopian future where people have lost the ability to dream.
Oh.
They want it back because life is not great without it, turns out. And the powers, white powers that be, have decided that the natives who can still dream, it must be something in their marrow. We must harvest it.
Oh, no.
It is horrifying.
Oh, God.
And so it follows pretty closely this, like, one specific band of, like, found family who's just trying to get by and, yeah.
Oof. Not get harvested.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So those were my fictions. My non-fictions. I kept this list a lot shorter because lunch was ending. Louise. Spirit Run. Noé Alvarez. He is from a Mexican immigrant family, left his life in a fruit packing plant behind to run 6,000 miles from Canada to Guatemala with Native Americans from like 9 different tribes.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. If you need inspiration to run, as we all do, you're on our team. Yeah, are you gonna run with us in the 5K?
I'll be cheering. I run if I'm chasing something.
All right.
Will you walk?
Oh yeah.
You could walk with us.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, if you need inspiration to walk, not 6,000 miles, but 3.
I was going to say, is that walk to and from every day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that. You do that. It's super good story. I read it a while back, so I don't remember any of the details, because as we've discussed, we're vibes readers in this closet.
Totally.
The vibes are good. Read it. Between Two Kingdoms, Suleika Jawad, Jean-Baptiste's wife, which was originally what drew me to it, because I love him.
Yeah.
It's a real sad-ish story. She was diagnosed with cancer the first time in 2011. Doctors gave her like a 30 or 35% chance of survival. She beat it. It's her story of, like, life before and after and during. It's from a few years ago. I think it came out in 2021 because we did a virtual event with her, and it was, like, the first virtual event that I had done with the store. Super interesting. Very inspiring. I think I was reading about her recently. She's since had it come back twice.
Oh, my God.
But she just keeps beating it, so, yeah. And then one that I meant to talk about on our last podcast, but forgot, and so I will talk about it now, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks by Rebecca Skloot. I feel weird saying it's one of my favorite books, because it's so awful and, like, so sad. But it's like 1950s America, black women get cervical cancer, cells are stolen for research. Mm. No compensation, no even just telling her or her family what they've done. So much good has come from it, so, like, at least there's that. But, like, if you need to get in the weeds about, like, ethics and medicine versus race and just general rights of being a person. That's the one. Okay. My LGBTQ list is much shorter. The first one I wrote is so silly. It's A Polar Affair by Lloyd Spencer Davis. It's gay penguins.
Yay!
Like, gay penguins.
Like in real life.
Yeah.
If you don't want real life gay penguins, you can read The Pengrooms.
Yes.
Which, two very cute picture books. But if you want real science and real penguins, this is the one.
Yeah.
There's also Entango Makes Three.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So many good gay penguins in the world.
We love gay penguins.
Mm-hmm. Gay penguin for president.
Yeah!
Global cooling. I stole that from the Batman penguin. That's
so good.
But still.
But, I like it.
Yeah.
We'll give you credit. a few years ago, my book journal at the time was one that, like, gave prompts in it. And so one was, like, a a book about LGBT character or written by an author. And I chose Nightwood by Juna Barnes. It's from 1936. Lesbian life in like a time when writing about that was not super common. Yeah. She even herself... there's, like, a funny quote from an interview with her where she's, like, she didn't want to be labeled as lesbian. She's, like, I'm not lesbian. I just loved Thelma or, like, whoever the name is.
I don't love women. I just love her.
I just love the one. Like, I love who I love. Leave me alone. And I so love cute. That
oh
so
my
much.
God. I love that.
So, yeah, that one was fun because it's, like, from the 1930s and just, like, diving into, like, gender nonconformity and, like, exploring... non-typical like sexual it's so good. I have since purchased lots of her other work because I loved this one so much. I haven't read any of them yet, but they're there. They're taunting me from my newly organized bookshelves. There's the basic white girl in me. It's Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
I
read it late, comparatively, because I have this weird thing where, like, if everyone loves it, I want no part of it.
Yeah.
I think eventually one of my bosses at my old job had read it, and I trusted her opinion, and she loved it, and I was like, okay, fine. I think I read it in, like, a day. Maybe two. I was like, oh my god, this is so good. Like, it's not, like, great literature, but it is such a good story. Poor Evelyn just keeps marrying these dudes, but all she really wants is her lady love, and yeah, so good. Even if everyone else also thinks it's so good. and then just broadly speaking, anything by William S. Burroughs.
Oh, yes.
If you need weird things happening that you don't understand, but you know that it's interesting, he's the one to go to. Mm-hmm. Almost done. A couple, like, disability, neurodiversity shout-outs. Born on a Blue Day, Daniel Tammet. It's old-ish, but he has a new one out, or at least new in paperback, that came out this week, Nine Minds, Inner Lives on the Spectrum. So he is on the spectrum. This new one I haven't read yet, but it sounds so good as nine stories about other people on the spectrum and how they get along in the world. Born on a Blue Day is, like, his story. Again, I read it a long time ago. I don't remember any details. The vibes were good. He's a great writer.
Awesome.
Super interesting story. And then a fiction, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Oh, Mark
Haddon. I love that book so much. It's like a murder mystery investigated by a 15-year-old boy with autism. He starts off being the main suspect, so he really wants to solve the crime of who killed his neighbor's dog. And works his little teenage butt off to figure it out. The answer is not great, but the story is
so good.
definitely recommend that one. That might be my reread.
That'd be a good
one. Yeah, there's too many to choose from, but that's high on the list of possibilities. And then the last one, some religious diversity. I don't actually, like, subscribe to any religion at all, but the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Super interesting stuff. Nice. I made the mistake of reading it after my dad died, like, ooh, right after. I was like, this will help me heal. Spoiler alert, it didn't.
Yeah.
But, like, certain aspects of it definitely were, like, comforting to just be like, oh, this is how other cultures handle their grief, and I think that works a lot better than how I'm doing it. So, yeah, there's my not even close to comprehensive list.
Yeah, I definitely stuck with racial diversity in mind, but also June is coming, and then you all get to hear about all the queer horror that I read in June. So
I felt less bad about that list being shorter because there will be plenty of time to talk about it in more depth.
You will hear more about other... We read diverse books all year long, so you'll hear more. You'll be shocked. I basically just made a list of diverse horror. No. And you,
I would have never guessed.
Mine was also leaning so hard into horror because that's where the good stuff is.
They're crushing it right
now. So I'm like, you know what? Ryan's got that. I'll focus on picture books.
There you go.
Opposite of horror.
Yeah. I'll run through my list pretty quick because a lot of these I've already talked about on the podcast, but sometimes people just need a reminder that they're out there. So for anthologies, Out There Screaming, edited by Jordan Peele, I cannot recommend it highly enough. I have discovered multiple black authors from reading this anthology, one of whom is Tanana Reeve-Dhu, who I'm obsessed with now. Her novel The Reformatory, which is also on my list, is like, that book gave me a panic attack. It was so tightly written and so tense, and heartbreaking also. But Out There Screaming has just, at its core, it is black horror, and it is horror of the black experience, but also it's like, you know, paranormal, or ghost, or space, or Western, like, there's all different genres within, which is really, really fun. So, really highly recommend that, and also, Never Whistle at Night.
Yes, that's on my list, too.
Indigenous horror anthology, which, again, oh my god.
Has the best
god.
Cover of, though, well, of all
so
book covers.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. So those two anthologies, like, you just, if you're looking for just a place to start, grab one of those, because that's a great place to, like, discover some new authors, get, like, a bite-sized little bit of diverse horror, and then you can go from there. Jackal by Erin E. Adams, love that one. The Spite House by Johnny Compton, really creepy, really good. I already mentioned The Reformatory by Tanana Reeve-Dhu. Lone Women by Victor Laval is so good. We just read it again for my book club, and I was like, God, I love this book. And then I just read Listen to Your Sister by Nina Veal, which is a new book. And again, black horror, it's got... It, like, really focuses on family, a sister and her two brothers, and she has these nightmares. And when she has a nightmare, she knows that one of her brothers is in actual real-life danger. And she has been making these deals with whoever will listen to, like, please save my brother. Please save my brother. And her brothers have escaped these, like, crazy circumstances that they probably should not have escaped, and maybe there are some consequences for that. It is really good and really dark. And then I also have a ton of Indigenous horror on here. Shudder by Ramona Emerson is the first book in a series of this Indigenous woman who is a crime scene photographer, and she can also see ghosts, and she... if she acknowledges them, which, like, on the one hand, she's like, okay, this could, like, kind of help solve the case because they can, like, kind of tell me what happened. But then, like, how is she going to prove it to the cop? She can't be like, oh, the ghosts told me what happened, right? And so she's, like,
got a first-person source. The
right?
Ghost.
The ghost told me. So she's, like, dealing with that. But also, if she does acknowledge them, then all... these other spirits are like, oh, someone can hear us. And they start just following her around, being like,
no.
Solve my case,
oh,
solve
no.
my case. And it is, so she's just like grappling with this. And there's two books out so far in the series. And they are so good. And I think I figured out I listened to the first one. And each chapter is, like, the chapter title is a different exposure on a camera. Oh. And I think I figured out, and I kind of want to go back and check, but I think each chapter the exposure changes so it's, like, a wider shot and, like, you're seeing more. And it's, like...
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, yeah. It was really... I need to double check that because I think the chapters are doing something really cool with the, like, aperture. I absolutely love, love, love that book. Bad Cree by Jessica Johns is another Indigenous horror that is spectacular. Anything by Stephen Graham Jones. I mean, the man can't lose. Like, he's just... everything is great. And Ashley, I'm so excited because there's a book coming out this year that is one of those double books. It's two books in one. Mm. So it's like, and I forget what one of the titles is, but the one I'm excited for is The Babysitter Lives, which up to now has only been an audio exclusive.
Ooh.
And it's one of my favorite stories. And it is gonna be in print for, I think, the first time, or the first time recently anyway, the first time we can get it, as part of this, like, duo book. And I am so excited that people are finally going to be able to read it, because I've been talking about it for so long, and it's so weird and good, and it's got, like, poltergeist vibes, and it's set on, like, Halloween, and there's a babysitter, and she's babysitting these kids who are real weird, and they've got, like, something weird going on in their house, and then, oops, they're stuck in the in-between.
Not again.
So when that happened. Oh, my God. It is so good, and I can't wait for everyone to read it.
Tangled in-between.
Oh, that stinky little in-between. And then I also, my staff pick last month was The Haunting of Room 904 by Erica T. Worth. She's also the author of White Horse. She's incredible. And this one is, big 1408 vibes. It is a haunted hotel room where, every certain number of years, a woman turns up dead in that room having... it looks like killed herself, even though she did not check into that room. There's no record of her staying in that room. No one has ever gone, you know, that room is never rented out, like, all this stuff. It's, you know, it's like every 7 years or whatever. And the main character at the, you know, core of the book is a paranormal investigator. And she's, you know, aware of, like, this haunted room thing that's happening, and then also she's doing these individual cases in which, like, she's like, oh, you're being haunted by this, like, angry indigenous spirit because, like, someone in your family was a bad white person and did something bad to them. And now they're, like, torturing you. And she starts to realize that there's a connection between that room and these angry indigenous spirits, and that, like, maybe it's actually one spirit that's, like, doing all of this, and it's just punishing white people, which, yeah, you know.
Fair.
Deserved. It's really good. I really, really recommend it. And then some other ones, literally anything Isabel Caños writes. She writes Mexican horror. She did The Hacienda, which was... so incredible. And she did Vampires of El Norte. Like, she's just... she's so good. She's so good. She writes, like, historical Mexican horror. On Mexican horror, we have Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia. Also, anything she writes, just give it to me. Just... I want it. There's an author that I think a lot of people don't know necessarily, but I love him, and I've met him a few times, and he's an absolute delight, and his name is Gabino Iglesias. He's Puerto Rican. Currently you'll see a lot of him. He writes horror reviews for, like, the New York Times or, like, these other, like, big publications. But he has his own books, and they're really, really good. He's got, like, The Devil Welcomes You Home. That title's wrong. I'll put links in the show notes. But his books are really good, and he has these, like, great covers that are really vibrant and beautiful. And he is... what a guy. I've met him a couple times, even though he lives in, like, Texas, but he, like, has come out to, like, New England events because he's, like, friends with all of the New England horror authors.
Hey.
And the first time I met him, I handed him my book of his to sign, a book that I had for a really long time, and he opened it to sign it, and a little spider crawled out.
Ooh, and he was perfect.
Like, he was like, wow, what a great omen. He was like, that's so cool. And we had a little bonding moment over that. So, you know, it was great.
Next week on the podcast, the spider.
Special guest, that one spider.
Beep, beep, beep. That's how spiders talk, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you got close enough. Then I have some Korean horror with The Eyes Are the Best Part by Monica Kim.
Yes!
God, I love this book. My staff pick review for this is, if you've ever wanted to know what an eyeball tastes like, you won't wonder anymore after you read this. You'll know the taste, you'll know the consistency, all of it. but it actually is a, like, serial killer origin story. Mm. And this young Korean woman who is sick and tired of misogynistic, racist men. And fair. She takes matters into her own hands.
Love that.
And I love her. I love her so much.
By matters, do you mean eyeballs?
Yes. Particularly blue ones. She's got a real fondness for blue eyes.
No.
Yeah, beware. But specifically because of her stepfather. Well, he's not married to her mom, but her mom's boyfriend, because he's a piece of work.
Well, I'm no one's mom's boyfriend, so
no,
I'm
you're
safe.
Not. You're safe. Yeah, it's really just misogynistic men who are also racist.
Good job not being that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I wake up every morning and choose not to be that.
And then I have a few Japanese horror on here. Revenge by Yoko Ogawa, which I think is an older book, but my book club read it last year. We've been in here so long, the lights just turned off on us. so spooky. And it is a book of, like, short stories, but it's one story. Like, they're all happening on the same day, and you can track them. Like, there will be, like, a clock or something, and you can be like, oh, okay, so this one was ending as this other one was beginning, and, like, oh, that person in the background is actually the main character from this other story. And so they're all, like, interconnected in interesting ways, but it's really mostly just about this one, like, small Japanese town, and it's weird, man. I was talking about it with my book club and described it as, like, the Japanese version of Goblin by Josh Malerman. Like, it's, like, this weird town, weird things are going on, but, like, ultimately it's mostly about the people, not the town itself. And they all sort of, there's... And I seem to remember this one had, like, our U.S. translation is Revenge, but I seem to remember it had a wicked baller title in Japanese. Like, it was a way better title. And if I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes, because it was, like, so metal. And, like, it was such a better title, and I was like, why did we go with this other one? Because it's, like, a little bit about revenge, but mostly it was, like, all these other things. And Revenge was only, like, maybe two of the stories, and, yeah, so... Anyway, but the book itself is spectacular. And then I somehow just discovered... Okay, this is so embarrassing. But my favorite horror movie is The Ring, and after 900 million times watching it, I only just this last time realized that it says based on the novel, and I went, what? Which sent me down a deep dive, and I have since discovered Koji Suzuki, which, like, I cannot believe this is the first that I'm... Anyway, he wrote The Ring. I now own the whole trilogy and a bunch of his other books, and if you want Japanese horror, that's where you go. Like, my God, I cannot, but I'm... Anyway.
You got so worked up that the lights came back on.
I did. I, like, moved around enough that the lights turned on.
The power.
The power of the ring. Thank you, Samara. And then I also have on my list Strange Pictures by Uketsu, which I bought on a whim when I was down in Boston, and I went to Porter Square Books at their new location, and I was looking at their horror section, and I was like, what don't I have yet? And that one, it's got a lime green cover, and I was like, this looks fun and spooky. So this is one, I don't know what it's about, I just know that it's Japanese horror, and I'm excited to read it, and we do actually have it here. I got back from Boston, and I went, oh, it's right there, okay, well... Okay, I hadn't seen it, so, you know, it's fine.
Gotta support bookstores.
Gotta support bookstores. I was excited to have something to buy at Porter Square. Their new location is great. Shout out to Josh Cook. And then just you know, always a good time to shout out Junji Ito with his horror graphic novels, because my God, they're good. And
I feel like there's a new edition of something every week.
Yeah. And he's got like I don't know if it's a new series or if they're new editions of an old series, but he's got like a liminal space series, and I am a sucker for liminal horror.
And you're in between place.
I love an in between place. I love it. Although I hated Skinamarink. It's fine. I have too much ADHD for Skinamarink. But like, I love a liminal space, and I started reading the first one in that series by Junji Ito, and I was like, oh, this is good. But yeah, he's got a bunch that are insane and so gory and gross and scary, and yeah, highly recommend. So that's all my... And by all means, that is not a comprehensive list. There are so many others. That's just what I walked by the shelves today, and I was like, oh, and that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. So by all means, if I missed your favorite, I'm sorry. We were probably sold out. Kate, you got some picture books for us.
I do have some picture books. I knew that we'd be handling a lot of the adult stuff, and I spent a lot of time over on the kids' side. And diversity is a huge part of being a kid and learning about the world in general. So picture books are a really good place to solidify that information early on, that the world is full of people and those people are nothing like you, but they're also just like you, and that's great. And it's also good for teaching those ideas maybe to not children who have not been properly exposed to these worlds. So we're going to step in... We're going to tiptoe in with a bunny hop in, actually. This is a new book by Mo Willems, who has written, I don't know, 12,000 perfect children's books.
Yes.
Like, came up through Sesame Street, became this brilliant author when I worked in a bookstore 20 years ago. His picture books were new, and I remember trying to talk people into them, and now I don't have to anymore. But I'm going to talk you into me and other bunnies, hence the bunny hop. It is told from the point of view of really cute animated rabbits, and everybody is a bunny, another bunny. We're all bunnies. If you don't know them, then they're other bunnies, but now that you've met them, they're bunnies too. We're all bunnies. Oh. And so it's very simple, but it doesn't bop you over the head or cheapen it.
Yeah.
And the bunnies, he's a great illustrator. The bunnies are drawn in every way that you could imagine. There are bunnies with mobility aids. There are bunnies who look nothing like bunnies at all. But now that we're introduced, I'm a bunny, you're a bunny, we're all bunnies. It's great. I love it.
Sounds cute.
Perfect.
It's super cute. I really, really like it. Another one that I think we all in here really love, and the bookstore really loves in general, it's called We Are Definitely Human.
Yes!
It's by X Fang.
Yes.
And it's about a flying saucer that is, wink, full of humans.
Definitely humans.
That crash lands in a field. And the farmer goes out at night to see what's going on, and before he can ask any questions or assess the situation at all, these aliens roll out and yell, "We are definitely human!" But it doesn't matter that they're probably not humans, or they're very different as they try to interact with everybody that they meet.
They have jobs and play sports ball.
They play sports ball. One of them makes business. One wears hat. His primary job is hat. I believe they are from Europe. But the farmer sees everything is different and goes, okay, well, it's the middle of the night, so you should probably come stay with us. Because that's what nice people do. And then they all go out in the morning with the family and look at the spaceship, and it needs a lot of work. So they take them to the hardware store and meet other people there, because that's what nice people do. If you need help, you help. the whole neighborhood comes to help rebuild the spaceship, and they have a big barbecue that involves one of the definitely humans talking to the dog, like, because it's also definitely a human, and trying to put hot dogs into its own belly button, because that's definitely how humans eat. But again, it's, you help because that's what good people do.
Yeah.
You help. It doesn't matter if you don't understand. It doesn't matter if things are very strange to you. Yeah. Someone needs help. You help them.
Yeah.
And it's drawn in a really... The illustrations are beautiful. It's these really bright, almost like oil pastel smears over black paper. It's really beautiful. It doesn't look like a lot of other picture books. I love it! other recent picture books that are awesome, The Interpreter. It's written by Olivia Abtahi and illustrated by Monica Arnaldo. And it's a book about first-generation kids in America who are the interpreter between their parents and their teachers, their parents and their jobs. And this kid is not just a kid. They are the connection between the two worlds. And so they have this really adult role as well as just being a kid and trying to explain things to their parents and, like, softening the translations back and forth because either side is not being tolerant of the... It's really good. It's really, really wonderful. And it was focused at the Librarians Conference last week, which was so good. There's Mama Wears a Hijab by Fifi Abu, who also illustrated. And it's just a great depiction of modern Muslim motherhood. Really cool cut paper style illustrations. And again, is great for children to see themselves in, and is also great for other people to learn about. My Daddy is a Cowboy by Stephanie Seals and illustrated by C.G. Esperanza is a fantastic picture book, and you don't need me to say that because it was up for all sorts of Caldecott honors and whatnot this past year, about the urban black cowboys of Southern California.
Nice.
And it's gorgeous and so cool, and I don't know how anybody could look at that book and not say, I want to be part of this. And it has really cool depictions of just all sorts of people, but also what it means to be a man, what it means to be a father, what it means to be black in this part of the country. It's great. I love it. Another newish one that was also up for a bunch of honors, Home in a Lunchbox by Cherry Moe, is about this little Korean girl who moves to the U.S. and doesn't know anybody, doesn't really know the language very well, and what she looks forward to every day is opening her lunchbox, because it's going to have all of the things that her mom makes that she knows from home that are comfortable and whatnot. And unlike the trope of the 80s, 90s, or I guess even still today, of foreign kid, gross food, all the other little kids, because kids are inherently good and curious, and they have to be taught to be terrible.
Yes.
All of these little kids are so fascinated by her lunch and whatnot that they all sit at her lunch table, and they end up all going home with her to try the food later for play dates, and she is able to learn more English and teach them more about her culture through sharing food.
Whoa,
and it's so
that.
Good, and it's really pretty. That's, I mean, so that's important sweet. Too. Is it pretty? Yes. Going into youth fiction, there's the aforementioned A Hero's Guide to Summer Vacation, which comes out next month. But that author has a ton of other books that are all great. There are two anthologies that I really like. There's You Are Here, Connecting Flights. It is edited by Ellen Oh, but it's 12 different young Asian American kids in one airport who are all going to different places and interact with each other in different ways in the airport.
Oh,
And each one of the 12 stories is written by another fantastic Asian American author.
Cool.
So it's really cool. And it's also a great way of sampling a whole bunch of authors in one go.
Yes.
I'm holding it up. Like, then there's also On All Other Nights, which is an anthology about celebrating Passover. And it takes place all over the world. It takes place all throughout time. But my favorite thing that it depicts is a family with a nonverbal teenager. Mm-hmm. And the story is told by her in her written words about how she celebrates with her family. And it's really, really nice. I'm always looking for neurodiversity in my books. Let's see. Speaking of, Elle McNichols, A Kind of Spark. She's an autistic author. It's about an autistic middle schooler who learns about witch trials. I keep reading about witch trials. and says, wait a minute. You know, these women, whether they were magic witches or not, they were different, and people ganged up on them because they were different. And that's happening to me right now, and I don't want this happening in my school and to people that I know. And kind of goes on her own anti-witch hunt, pro-autistic journey, and it's lovely.
That's beautiful.
It's so good. Let's see. And then I'll hit two young adult books. One is by Farah Nasrishi. Mm-hmm. It's called I Hope You Get This Message. I learned about this one through Cannonball Read. What's up, guys? And our Future is Queer book club a couple years ago. And it's a sci-fi. The world is ending. But it's told through three kids who are usually the side characters in other people's stories. Mm-hmm. But there's queer kids, there's Muslim kids, there's poor kids. And they're all racing to Roswell to see what's going to happen when the world ends.
Amazing.
It's really, I'm going to say sweet again. Guys, it's sweet! And then, And then this book absolutely rules. It's a graphic novel by Jasmine Walls and Theo Duvall. I always make sure it's on the prismatic spinner. It's called Brooms, and it is what if you could actually race broomsticks. And, of course, white people ruin it by outlawing magic for everybody else. And everybody else says, I don't think so. And so it is queer, League of Their Own, Fast and the Furious on brooms in the 30s. Yes. And it rules. It absolutely rules.
Incredible.
Yeah. And I've got all sorts of adult recs and whatnot, but you don't need those from me. I'll tell Ryan, they'll go in the list. But there is one I'm going to shout out that Ashley reminded me of when talking about religious diversity. I'm obsessed with Caitlin Doughty's From Here to Eternity, and just got shy to read it too, and is also now obsessed. And it's about different death cultures and practices all over the world, and traveling to completely remote, far-off places and learning really intricate tribal culture around the way that they celebrate and venerate their dead, and also going to bustling modern cities and at places like Japan that are really tech forward in how they're handling death and dying while also holding on to remembrance. And they do go all over the world, get into some things that I've never heard of before, but even the most outlandish things, Caitlin, or things that would seem outlandish, they're not truly outlandish. It's outlandish because you don't have that lens. Caitlin Doughty comes from a place of genuine curiosity and awe and understanding, because we're all just trying to understand something when it comes to death. And everybody's got a different way of doing it. And it's super fascinating and also really funny. Nice. So cheer yourself up with a death book.
Incredible. Yay, diverse books. Yay, diverse reading. Yay. Hooray.
Woo.
Yeah, so we'll start wrapping up. I do just want to mention we very sort of like casually slipped in some talk about maybe walk running 3 miles. So I just want to give some context to that.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I love it. It's the perfect opportunity to talk about the Concord Pride 5K, which benefits Equality Health Center, who many of you probably know. We love them. They
best
are our
neighbors
across the street, and we are big fans of what they do. And we have raised money for them before through, like, Pride Month donation buckets and things like that. And a bunch of us from Gibson's are going to be doing the 5K on June 1st. And I will put our team link in the show notes if you want to donate to support Gibson's Booksellers Running 5K. And those donations will benefit Equality Health Center. You can do that. There's a place to do that.
Or be on the team.
Or you can be on our team if you want to.
Or you can cheer.
Cheer for us. We're very excited. There's a bunch of us signed up. Even John is going to sign up and do the 5K with us. We're so excited. We love John. I just wanted to give some context for that. And also, like, if you're in Concord and you want to do a fun 5K, you don't have to run it. You can walk it. and it's going to be a good time, and it supports a great cause. So there's that. As always, a reminder about our partnership with Libre FM. Listeners who are new to Libre FM can receive 2 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. And also, because we have Indie Bookstore Day at the end of this month, Libre FM does do special Indie Bookstore Day deals, so stay tuned for that. We will have graphics that we post so that you know what's going on Indie Bookstore Day for Libre FM. Also, come visit us on Indie Bookstore Day. We have some fun stuff planned, let
me
tell you.
Yes, we do.
Kate's going to be a Zoltar machine. I'm excited.
I'm going to tell you what to read. And it won't all be picture books, but if that's what you want,
if that's what
I
you
got
want, we got you. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, and maybe
more.
Some bonus, some additional ones as well, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. And honestly, if you buy some books because of this podcast, put in the order notes that you bought them because of the podcast, because we like to see those notes.
Yeah.
And Ashley processes most of them, and so she'll get to see them directly, and that's fun.
We love hearing from you!
We do!
Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them, and those links will also be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore.
Bye! Bye!